November 29th. So do you want to call the roll?
Hugh Daly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Wheeler.
Okay, we will start with our standard city attorney greeting.
Got a lot to say today. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so that everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in City Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for Communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you're a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. Okay, now the land use script.
Okay, thank you. Well, Sue, first read the item, and then I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. Item 1215, appeal of Northwest District Neighborhood Association and Tony Schwartz against Historic Landmarks Commission's decision to approve Block 162 Apartments, a five-story plus residential development at 1727 Northwest Hoyt Street.
Okay, our city attorney will make some opening remarks.
Okay, thank you. This is an on-the-record hearing. This means that you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. We will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. We have two appellants today, so it's a little bit of a different order. The appellant one will go first and will have 10 minutes. Appellant two will then go and have 10 minutes. Supporters of the appellants will then have 3 minutes each. And then the principal opponent, the applicant here, will have 30 minutes. And other opponents will have 3 minutes each. Then appellant one will get a rebuttal for 5 minutes. Appellant two will get a rebuttal for 5 minutes, and then we'll move on to council discussion. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing the council today. Again, this is an on-the-record hearing. This hearing is to decide only if the Landmarks Commission made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to it. This means that you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the Landmarks Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Landmarks Commission. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to the Landmarks Commission. And if your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded that you must limit your testimony to the record. The Council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. Objections to new evidence. If you believe a person who addressed the City Council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence that is not in the record, you may object to that argument. Objections to new issues. Finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the Landmarks Commission may be raised in this appeal to City Council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not raised before the Landmarks Commission, you may object to the Council's consideration of that issue. The applicant must identify any constitutional challenges to the conditions of approval. Additionally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. That's it.
That's it? Okay, great. Do any members of council wish to declare a conflict of interest? Okay. No council members have a conflict of interest. Do any members of council have ex parte contacts to declare or information gathered outside of this hearing to disclose?
I have a specific not ex parte contact to disclose. I met with the Historic Landmarks Commissioner Wendy Chung on April 5th of this year. We did not discuss the specifics of this case.
Okay. And Does anyone wish to, in the council chambers, wish to ask Commissioner Fritz about this contact with Commissioner Wendy Chung? Okay. Have any members of council made any visits to the site involved in this matter?
I think I must have walked past it at least once or twice, but I did not specifically for the purpose of this.
Okay. So there are no site visits involved by council members. And so now we will begin with the staff report for 10 minutes.
All right. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Grace Jeffries. I am a city planner with the Bureau of Development Services.
Today, Sue, could you set the clock for 10 minutes, please?
Today, I'll be providing basic context for this proposal for Block 126 Apartments at 1727 Northwest Hoyt and summarizing the final findings and decision of approval by the Historic Landmarks Commission. My presentation includes a run through the context, then a more in-depth review of the proposal, and finally a quick description of the appeals. First, the context. So the subject site is located in Northwest Portland in the Northwest Plan District and the Alphabet Historic District. The site is zoned RH, which is short for High Density Residential. Because the site lies within the Alphabet Historic District, it has a Historic Resource Protection Overlay. Directly on the site lies the Buck Prager Building, indicated in solid red, which is considered a contributing resource to the district. Historic resources close by include, to the north and south of the site, across Northwest Hoyt and Irving, are individually listed landmark structures. That's indicated by the brown dots. To the west of the site, across Northwest 18th, are contributing resources indicated by blue shading. Non-contributing development is indicated in yellow. So zoning allowances for this site include a base floor area ratio, or FAR, of a maximum of 4:1. For proposals meeting inclusionary housing requirements, an FAR of up to 5:1 is allowed. The proposal is under that at 3.6:1. The maximum allowed height is 75 feet, and the proposal is also well under that at 58 feet. Just as you know, as a note, this proposal is also subject to inclusionary housing requirements under Zoning Code Chapter 33245, Inclusionary Housing. This chapter requires new buildings with 20 or more dwelling units and alterations to existing buildings that add 20 or more dwelling units to afford affordable dwelling units at the prescribed rates. Adjacent to the site, the northeast corner of the block is zoned EG1, which is general employment. It has a different zoning allowances than the RH zone. A modification is requested to landscaping setback for the proposed loading space adjacent to this property. I will speak more about this modification in a later slide, but just so you know, the zoning allowances for this site include an FAR of 3:1 and a height of 45 feet. There's also required side setbacks, which vary from 5 to 14 feet, depending on the size of the building wall. And there's required landscape buffers at side lot lines of 5 feet of L3 if the wall is less than 50 feet high and 10 feet of L3 if the wall is over 16 feet in height. This land use review consists of three parts, each with its own approval criteria. For the historic resource review, the approval criteria are the community design guidelines and the historic Alphabet District Community Guidelines Addendum, which is located in Appendix I of the Community Design Guidelines. These documents are separate from the zoning code but are referred to in Zoning Section 33846-060-E1C. For the two requested modifications, the approval criteria are found in Zoning Code Section 33846-070, modifications considered during historic resource review. And for the requested adjustment, the approval criteria are found in Zoning Code Section 33805-040. Here's a brief overview of the site. The total site area is 20,000 square feet. There is an existing building, the Buck Prager, on the site. There's also an existing one-story structure to the north of it, which will be demolished. Two surface parking areas, one on the north end and one on the south end of the lot. It has three street frontages. It has 200-foot frontage on Northwest 18th and a half-block frontage of 100 feet on Hoyt and on Irving. I'm going to take you through the context really quick, just to get a feel for what is there on site right now. This is a view of the southwest end of the site from the corner of Northwest 18th and Hoyt. You can see the painted brick front of the Buck Prager building facing Northwest 18th, and its exposed red brick side facing the existing surface parking lot to the south. This is a view from Northwest Hoyt showing that side elevation of the Buck Prager beyond the surface parking. And to the right, you can see adjacent residents east along Northwest Hoyt. This is a view of individually listed landmark houses across Northwest Hoyt from the site, which are part of the Trenkeman Houses Group. This is a view north on Northwest 18th showing the First Norwegian Danish Church across from North 18th from the site, which is considered a contributing resource. And this is a view of the northwest end of the site from the corner of Northwest 18th and Irving. You can see the existing one-story wood-framed multi-dwelling building, which will be demolished to the north of the Buck Prager building. This also shows the existing surface parking lot at the north end of the site. This is a view of the individual listed landmark houses across Northwest Irving from the site, which are part of the Cooch Family Investment Development. And this is a view of the individual listed landmark houses across and down Northwest Irving from the site, the Campbell townhouses. This is a view west on Irving showing the existing one-story commercial structure to the east of the site, which, as noted earlier, is zoned EG1. Now I'll give a brief overview of the proposal. First, a bit of land use history. There was a previous land use decision by the City Council for this site. In 2014, the City Council denied a Type 4 demolition review for the demolition of the Buck Prager building, the existing contributing resource on the site. The top drawing shows that proposal with an overlay of this current proposal shown with the red dotted line. A project history for this current proposal, 3 voluntary design advice request meetings were held with the Historic Landmarks Commission. The applicant was very responsive to the feedback, undertook numerous changes to the proposal, including revisions to massing, height, and design refinements, to better respond to the Buck Prager as well as the surrounding neighborhood and the district character. So the proposed development includes 3 structures. There's a 5-plus story north building, that's the building in red brick. There's the Buck Prager renovation, that's the building that's light in kind of a light cream color. And then to its right is the 4-story south addition to the Buck Prager. This structure is considered an addition because there are internal connections to the Buck Prager. So those 2 buildings to the right will work together. There are openings between them, and they function as one building. So it's considered an addition, whereas the north building has no connections to this building, so it's considered new development. Additional reviews include a modification to bike parking spaces. This is a pretty common supported modification. It reduces the required spacing between long-term bike parking spaces from 2 feet to 1 foot 6 inches and to provide non-lockable bike racks within the dwelling units. Second modification is to omit the required 5 feet of L2 landscape screening buffer required between the loading space and the adjacent EG1 property off of Northwest Irving. It's important to note that this is only for the required landscape setback at the loading space shown in the red arrow and the dotted line, so just a short part of that frontage. The new buildings themselves meet the required side setback minimums, so they're placed the right distance away, and landscape is provided the remaining length of the property line. The top image shows the concrete sidewall of the neighboring one-story commercial building adjacent to the proposed loading area. This is a blow-up of that area, just to show that there's actually a required 5-foot pedestrian pathway as well as the 9-foot required loading space throughout that area. So it's a very tight area. There's additional non-required landscaping noted close by along the frontage on Irving. There's also adjustment requested to the number of loading spaces from 2 standard B spaces on the site to 1 standard B space. The code asks for residential developments 100 units or less. It requires one Type B loading space. Because there's 100 units in the north building, shown in orange, the loading space is proposed to serve that population. The adjustment was requested to not provide on-site loading space for the 48 units in the Buck Prager and the South Addition, shown in blue. Because this proposal is for senior housing studio apartments, PBOT found that these types of units have a much lower turnover rate, and being studios, not as much to move in and out. Also, PBOT's view of on-site Type B loading spaces has been evolving, and their experience has been that most are not being used for loading, but as trash and recycling area that has curb cut to wheel out the dumpsters. The curb cut for a Type B space is 10 feet wide with 6 feet wide commercial wings. This results in a 22-foot curb space that is permanently lost for private use. So PBOT would rather have control over how the curb zone is managed. And by allowing an on-street loading space instead, they can assign the hours so it's available to residents and visitors during peak times. And that adjustment was supported by both BDS and PBOT. The Portland Landmarks Commission voted 5-1 to approve this land use review. Now going to the appeal, the Landmark Commission's decision of approval with conditions was appealed by two parties. Both appellants cite 6 guidelines as not being met and 5 procedural issues. Guidelines all speak to the proposal's response to its surrounding context. In the final findings and decision summary, the Historic Landmarks Commission found the proposed development will retain and preserve the Buck Prager, a contributing resource in the Alphabet Historic District, and the resulting multiple building frontage will add fine-grained scale to the block, which is a desired characteristic of historic development in the district. And the red arrow points to the Buck Prager. Now there's 5 procedural issues raised by the appellant. I have a response to each one of those. It looks like I might run out of time. Maybe I'll set.
Yeah, go ahead.
You want me to go through them? Okay. I might go over my time.
Yeah, already did.
The first one is the application was declared complete when guideline P1 had not been addressed. So BDS's response is that deeming an application complete does not mean a closed record. It means that enough information has been provided on the drawings to begin a full review of the application. Further information can and usually is submitted after an application is deemed complete. There's approximately a 51-day period after completeness to a Type 3 hearing, and it would be an unworkable process if further information was not allowed after application was deemed complete. So the second procedural issue, the hierarchy of regulations, was not followed. BDS's response is that the city's hierarchy of regulations gives guidance where regulations conflict. In this case, however, the Landmarks Commission found that no conflict between the historic overlay zone and the base allowances existed. 3, an incomplete history of the site was provided. BDS's response is that this review, regarding the Type 4 demolition review, this review was mentioned in the final findings, the design advice request summary notes, and the staff presentation to the Landmarks Commission. In-depth findings of that review were not replicated in these final findings because, unlike that review, this was for demolition of the Buck Prager. However, this proposal keeps that structure.
Could you put back the screen with the appeal conditions?
Sorry?
Yeah, can you move back? Yeah. Yeah.
Does that go okay?
Next one.
No.
Sorry, yeah.
Would you like the image of the appeal?
No, I think you inadvertently went to the questions screen.
Oh, sorry.
Before you... ran through your...
Is that good? Okay.
There.
Sorry about that. Thank you.
Okay.
So I'm still on number 3. Regarding the adjacent historic structures, there are no directly adjacent structures to this proposal. However, there are, as I pointed out, numerous contributing and landmark structures across the streets. These are noted under the analysis in the final findings and in the staff presentation to the Landmarks Commission. They're also referred to under specific findings, such as under the Historic Alphabet District number 2, differentiate new from old. Number 4, public comments addressing approval criteria were not acknowledged or evaluated. BDS's response is that the neighborhood review section of the final findings lists the letters received prior to the issue of the staff report. In response to the letters, which reference the guidelines, rather than repeat detailed findings again in this section of the report, the findings were cross-referenced to instead. Staff response also notes that the following items are not relevant to the approval criteria. That includes the type of the housing, the amount of parking, and density. And number 5, harassment of one Historic Landmarks Commissioner adversely affected the proceedings. BDS's response is that at the historic resource review hearings, commissioners confirmed that they were able to make a fair and impartial decision. No concerns were voiced by the commission about being able to discuss the proposal freely, and no mention was made about the inability to apply the applicable approval criteria. So your alternatives facing you, you can deny the appeal and uphold the Historic Landmarks Commission to approve the land use review. You can deny the appeal, uphold the commission's decision to approve with additional conditions of approval, the land use review. You can grant the appeal and overturn the Historic Landmark Commission's decision to approve the land use review, thereby denying the proposal. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay.
Do you have questions for me?
Questions?
Thank you for your presentation. That makes it much clearer than just reading the hearings officer's decision and the evidence in the record. Regarding the loading spaces, on page 21 of the decision, it says that the purpose of the standard for two loading spaces is a minimum is required to ensure adequate areas for loading of larger uses and developments. And then the findings say that developments such as this, affordable senior housing consisting of studio apartments, tend to have minimal apartment turnover and less need for unloading larger furniture. But we don't have any conditions of approval saying that it is going to be affordable senior housing.
Right, and that is something that staff added. I mean, this was an affordable project put forward, so those findings would stand whether or not the term affordable was in there, because PBOT's findings really spoke about the size of the units, not the type of housing. So there are very small senior units. Whether it's a small A or a big A, they're very small, so they're affordable, or they're affordable in terms of being supplemented by the Housing Bureau.
Okay.
So affordable is more along the lines of they're small units, they're residents who live in those type of units, don't have a lot of belongings because they're small. So move in and move out, PBOT found, really wasn't they felt that by putting that type B loading space actually was more detrimental, as I'd read through their findings, but they found it took away more curb space.
Okay, but then where will the apartments have their recycling and trash?
Well, so recycling and trash are within the building itself. So every floor in the building has a trash room, and so on trash day, I would think the building management would then move that trash out to the street. Yeah, they're required by zoning code to have trash and recycling within the building.
Okay. And then on the bicycle rack modification, if these apartments are going to be for seniors, isn't that going to be difficult for them to be lifting the bikes up and down to have staggered bike parking?
I don't have the drawings in front of me. However, this is for the in-unit rack. Most of the units have in-unit racks. So there's an elevator that would take people up to their units.
There's a rack, and they're supposed to be 2 feet apart, and they're going to be 1 foot 6 inch.
Right.
Do we have somebody from PBOT here today?
I don't believe we do.
Okay.
However, it's a pretty common modification that we make.
I know, I've seen it on multiple occasions, and every time I'm like, why do we have a standard of 2 feet if we're going to make it 1 foot 6 inches every single time?
And I think that's
but
a great point.
In this particular instance, if these apartments are going to be mostly used by seniors, it's even more difficult for those folks to be able to lift their bikes up to get it on the rack.
Right, and our zoning code allows vertical racks. So this is just the spacing between racks. So when they put vertical racks, they're allowed to have vertical racks. Our zoning code allows it. So the space is really just what we ask, instead of having the two racks equal, they have to stagger them. But they're allowed to do vertical racks at the 2 foot spacing, but they have to be staggered so the handlebars don't hit each other.
Perhaps I can have a conversation with the applicants about why they chose to have racks that are going to be more difficult to use rather than racks at the standard
right.
width and fewer of them. Thank you.
Okay.
I have a quick question. I just want to make sure I'm clear. You mentioned a commercial building adjacent to this development that has ED1 zoning. Could you explain what ED1 is and what the FAR and height limits on that are?
Yeah, so EG1 is General Employment 1, and sorry, I'll just find that. So the FAR for that northeast block of that site is 3:1, and the height is 45 feet.
Okay. And what was, where is it? In, yeah, relation to.
This is a, here's a picture of it.
Yeah.
That's the face that goes away from this.
So it's on?
It's on the corner of Irving and 17th.
17th?
Yes. I have, sorry.
Okay.
I know I have a diagram here. I apologize. Oh, it's at the, I'm sorry.
Oh, I
so
see.
So it's where the arrow is. Can you see how the EG1 zone cuts into
I
the
see.
Site? And so that's where that one-story existing building is located.
I see.
It could be redeveloped.
That
or it could stay the way it is.
Solves my question, because I was a little confused about the modification with the greenery.
Yeah, but, right, okay. The landscape adjacent to it.
Could I see that photo again?
So that's the area. The loading space is shown in orange-ish yellow, and the red dotted line kind of swoops around that area. So the zoning code requires a 5-foot landscape setback in that zone. Between this and the adjacent property.
The adjacent property.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here is a blow up of that, what happens in that zone. So in that zone is that 9-foot loading space, and then there's a required 5-foot pedestrian path, hard path, to access the back of the building. So, it's a tight area.
Yeah.
The remaining property line, the length of it, does have landscaping, but it's just this little top corner.
I was disoriented when you were going through this slide, so now I totally get
vertical
it.
Thank
you.
Yeah, I apologize.
Yeah.
I had the same question, so thank you for asking it.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, we will hear first from Appellant 1, which will be the Northwest District Association. And if you can... Man. So if you just, when you're speaking, if you can each just give us your name, and then you have a combined 10 minutes, and I believe there's a clock right in front of you there.
Sorry, I'm out of practice.
Yeah, really?
Commissioners, I'm Greg Tyson, co-chair of the Northwest District Association Planning Committee. Affordable housing and historic preservation are not mutually exclusive. We're here to tell you we support high-density housing throughout Northwest Portland. City Council is responsible for supporting affordable housing and protecting historic resources, which is the dilemma of the case you have in front of you here today, and we believe you can balance these goals and that by doing so we'll ensure integrity, livability, and the continued special character of Portland. And in the context of a housing crisis that is 10 years in the making, NWDA is proud to have supported the over 3,500 new housing units that have been built in the neighborhood since 2010. This is more housing units than any other neighborhood by far, including our neighbors to the east in the Pearl District. From Everton 14th, Gleason and 19th, Johnson and 19th to Slabtown, we work to preserve historic resources and allow high-density housing.
So today we're going to give you...
Could you give us your name, please?
Oh, sorry about that. Joselle Johnson. I'm a direct neighbor and also part of the NWDA secretary. Today we're going to look at the overview of what we're telling you about our neighborhood, the criteria, the errors, and the conditions. First, I want to talk to you about our neighborhood. It's a unique neighborhood because it's the first area in Portland that actually rental houses and investment houses were made. So the fancy mansions on 19th came and gone, but the Kuchik additions that they invested in actually remain. So as you look at the pages here, each of the blue lots is a historic lot. The red houses are individually listed or contributing to the Alphabet District. If we walk down our neighborhood, much of what was in the 1800s at the end of the last century still remain. We have the Cooch additions, the only brick townhouses that are in Portland, which are the Campbell townhomes. Looking down 18th to the south, we again see things that we would have seen in our historic area. The picture on the lower left is actually the lane of the cornerstone to the Blue Church. And those are the Trenkman houses that you see actually directly in front of the units. What we also have there are the Morrison investment homes that wrap around that are directly adjacent to the property. So one of the things we want to be real clear, historically the Northwest has been the most dense residential neighborhood, not only in Portland but in all of Oregon. We are the largest concentration of individually listed properties in these six blocks. And this proposal would present overly large buildings that go right through the middle of this historic area.
Hi, I'm Jessica Richman. I'm a member of the Northwest District Association. I've owned and lived in a condo a block from the site for more than 30 years. I'm also a city planner and retired a few years ago, as some of you remember, after working nearly 30 years for the city and writing many of the regulations you administer. We request that you deny this proposal because the approval criteria are not met. I'm going to go through some approval criteria very quickly. Historic Alphabet District Guideline 2, differentiate new from old, the text of the guidelines in front of you. This is not met because the new structures are way out of scale with nearby buildings and have other incompatible features listed on the slide. The findings do not even mention the 13 adjacent structures that are individually listed on the National Register and called out in the context statement for this district as shown on your screens. Historic Alphabet District Guideline 3, Hierarchy of Compatibility. The guidelines on your screen, it calls first for compatibility with the original resource, in this case, the Buck Prager Building, second with adjacent properties, and finally with the rest of the district. It's not clear whether new development has to meet this hierarchy. However, that doesn't matter because based on the definitions in the zoning code, adding a building to a site where there is already development, in this case the Buck Prager Building, is considered an exterior alteration. The findings erred in considering it new development, but it wasn't clear in the findings or the hearing that that's why they were not addressing compatibility with the Buck Prager and the immediate neighborhood, because at no time until a recent letter from the applicant did anybody say, oh, we think the North Building is new development. The zoning code, of course, is part of the record, and these definitions are from the record. The North Building is an exterior alteration and failed to meet the hierarchy. Regardless, as shown on this slide, neither structure meets the approval criteria, and the hierarchy is not even addressed for the North Building.
Thank you. Could I interrupt for one moment, please, and you may stop the clock. I just want to thank Commissioner Saltzman for running the start of the hearing. I'm going to assume the responsibilities of the presiding officer at this point, and I'd like to state for the record that I have neither any conflicts of interest to declare, nor do I have any ex parte contacts. But I want to give anybody who is present the opportunity to ask me any questions about that if they have any. Seeing none, thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay. Again, the South Edition and the New Edition, some more information about the issues of their compatibility and so on. Community Design Guideline P1, again, the text is in front of you, and this approval criterion is not met. You have an excerpt from the desired characteristics statement in front of you, and this design clearly does not comply with the desired characteristics and tradition of the area. This slide shows you more about the eastern edge and the existing urban pattern in that area. Development that responds to the desired characteristics and traditions would be less massive, more to scale of the surrounding buildings and the Buck Prager itself, set back as existing development is, and would pick up more design cues from the many historic homes adjacent to the site. Community Design Guideline P2 calls for designs that reinforce the area's historic significance. This quote from the background statement helps explain what the guideline means. The guideline is not met by sandwiching the Buck Prager building between two overly large buildings or by placing those large buildings in the middle of a nearly intact cluster of historic homes. In relation to this criterion, your previous findings just 3 years ago were for a demolition review, but also addressed in detail what the council thought would be appropriate on that site, which is why we thought they should be included in the staff report and in the commission's decision. Those findings noted the many historic buildings that surround the site, stated that the then-proposed 4- to 6-story building was not acceptable for many reasons, including being severely out of scale. That's a quote. We think these findings apply even more so to this proposal. However, they were not even considered as part of this review. Community Design Guideline D6, Architectural Integrity. Again, you have the text in front of you. And again, this criterion is not met, and it's the reverse of respecting the character of the existing building, with new structures totally overpowering the Buck Prager and adjacent historic homes. Again, what I just said about good development applies here. The South Addition has a host of problems listed on this slide. Community Design Guideline D7, blending into the neighborhood. Again, the text is in front of you. And again, the criterion is not met for a host of reasons, primarily the large-scale height, lack of setbacks, and many details. This table shows some of the details as to why the guideline is not met by this proposal. There were a number of procedural errors that Grace addressed, or that Grace responded to. We know that there is time for additional information. However, failure to address a guideline entirely, we think, is a reason that an application should be determined incomplete. We request that you deny this proposal, but if you do approve it, we ask that you attach a condition requiring that they do what they say that they are going to do, build housing affordable to 60% of median family income. A quick response to Commissioner Fritz's questions, this approval without this condition would not require that the housing be at any particular rent level and would also not require that the units be studios. They could build 2 bedrooms within the shell that's approved. Is there a nexus for this condition? Not directly in the approval criteria, but certainly in the way this proposal has been presented, discussed, reviewed, and considered. Discussion of affordable housing has pervaded all aspects of this case, and even in the wording of the approval, and even in just the few minutes of discussion this council has had. Well, the affordability.
If I could interrupt for a moment, technically your time is up. But
may I request another 60 seconds?
What we typically do is allow you to continue, and then we'll have the principal opponent have an equal add-on.
Of course.
Thank
you.
Please feel free. Thank you.
While the affordability should not be considered, it is difficult to ignore that aspect of the proposal, even for us, especially given the current housing situation in Portland. We found it difficult to be as critical of this design as we would for market rate housing, and we don't really expect you to ignore that aspect either, even though we all should. However, once a design is approved, any developer or landowner can come in and build this design, and it can be market rate, two bedrooms, et cetera. To assure that the housing is indeed affordable, we are asking for that condition of approval. And again, it is based on what they've said that they would do. You may want to ask the applicant if they would accept the condition voluntarily, as again, it's just what they're saying they will do. And if they're not willing, their reasons would be of interest. In conclusion, because the immediate neighborhood is a unique slice of Portland, thank you, because the approval criteria are not met and because procedural errors were made, we request that you deny this proposal. And thank you. We'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I had a question, Jessica. I mean, this site, as they said at the outset, is going to be subject to the inclusionary housing requirements.
Yes.
So,
that only
and you're asking for a condition that says all of it would be 60% affordable?
Right. The inclusionary housing would require that 20% of the units be at 80% of median family income. But we think that their proposal that all of them be at 60% of MFI has colored all of us, all of our perceptions of this project, and has made us less harsh in our judgment of it because we know that the need for affordable housing is so dire. But we are concerned that if, for example, they were unable to get funding, because they have not yet secured funding, if they weren't able to get funding, that approval would be sitting there and another developer could come along and say, oh, wait, we got this approval, let's build this for market rate. And that's our concern and the nexus.
Okay, well, I guess we'll hear from the applicant at some point, but even if that were that situation, the scenario you just described were to occur, the parcel would still be subject to inclusionary housing if it was to transfer to a new owner.
Right, but then we would get a much smaller number of units at higher rents, and 80% of the units would be at market rate. And if the initial proposal was for simply a market rate proposal, then we believe that we might have been harsher in our evaluation, the Landmarks Commission might have been, and this council might be, because it is such a persuasive and dire need.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Daly, did you have a question?
I don't think so. I guess I'm always a little concerned with asking questions that might introduce new information into the record, so I err on the side of not asking questions.
You could whisper
Lauren, will
them
you
to the city attorney.
Me? Yeah.
Go ahead and ask.
Full disclosure, I lived in this neighborhood across the street from Jessica for 18 years,
yes.
So I'm very familiar with it, but I did
we
not.
We miss you.
Oh, thanks. never owned property, have no interest, financial interest in the area, and don't make it back to Northwest Portland very often these days. I'm an East Sider now. The historic district is much larger than this specific area we're talking about, and there are newer developments, like the one that you live in. Well, not as new anymore. But how many stories is that? Three or four?
There's a grade change, so it... And it's multiple levels, so it ranges from two to four stories.
And then there was a redevelopment on the southeast corner of 19th and Hoyt. How many
Park
blocks
19.
Is that? Yeah.
That is six
stories.
And at the time, Mr. Joslin, who was in charge of the design section of BDS, erroneously told the Landmarks Commission that they did not have authority to reduce the height or floor area even though that was not true, and he later changed his mind on other cases, and I clarified the code to make it super crystal clear instead of just crystal clear that they had the authority. But because the Landmarks Commission agreed with him or listened to their staff, they approved the building at that size, also noting that there was a park across the street that helped to mitigate it.
So, Council, we did receive an objection from the applicant, and staff have both identified that all of this information you're getting now is new evidence and was not before the Landmarks Commission. So,
The issue about Park 19 was discussed at the Landmarks Commission, as was...
The context of this particular...
Yes, and I specifically talked about Mr. Joslin's advice to the
I'll
commission.
Stop asking the questions. It's been a while since I've seen this area, and I was just trying to put this development into the larger context because, yes, the adjacent blocks have small-scale single-family residences, but the fact is there are also large multifamily developments quite nearby. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the additional time.
No worries. Next up is appellant number 2. I understand that's Tony Schwartz. Thank you for being here, and if you can keep it as close to the 10-minute time frame as possible, I'd appreciate it. Any extra, I will add on to the additional 2 minutes and 3 seconds that the principal opponent will have.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Tony Schwartz. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Commissioners, I am an appellant, and I would assert that this case is ultimately about fairness. It's about equal justice under the law, no more and no less. The law must be applied equally, uniformly, without passion or prejudice. As now deceased
developer... I'm going to have you stop for a second because the clock's not running yet.
Is it distracting?
Sorry.
No problem.
Oh, where's Sue?
Oh, and Mike...
Oh, there she is. Oh, she's working on the technology. One moment. Sorry, Mr. Schwartz.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
So we were listening to that first part, so you got an extra 20 seconds or something.
Oh, and I was about to say the time didn't start, so we... Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I wanted to say that the rule of law, I'd like to start off by saying about the case is about fairness, and the time has now started. As now deceased developer and preservationist Art DeMiro stated after the final vote on the Blanchet House, we need to be blind to the applicant and the mission. The rule of law requires that commissions, city councils, judges, reviewing bodies apply the law consistently without favor and are blind to the applicant's relative worth or goodness. Otherwise, the law will be used to reward some, suppress and harm others, and contribute to an increasing distaste and distrust with our system of government. I suggest that in this case, the political winds surrounding housing and the applicant's goodness or worth overwhelm the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission and has the power to overwhelm this city council. I heard today for the very first time from staff that the affordability that the applicant has been proposing is not essentially below market rates. They are affordable in the sense that they are cheaper than normal. We had never heard that in the 3 DARs or the land use application. That's the first time I heard that. I will tell you that the burden of proof is on the applicant to show with substantial evidence that each and every element of the applicable approval criteria will be satisfied or has been satisfied. I think some background is important in this matter. This site has been addressed by this body before. In 2014, the landowners and the applicant requested for demolition of the Buck Prager building and a replacement building on that site of 4 to 6 stories. There was a substantial amount of time and energy that went into opposing the demolition of the Buck Prager and opposing the replacement of the 4 to 6 story, saying that it was out of character and overwhelming within this unique site that has 13 individually listed landmark homes. This city council, after the Landmarks Commission agreed to not demolish the Buck Prager, this city council also agreed. And in its findings, it spent substantial amount of time saying that the 4-to-6 story replacement building was severely out of character. I use those words because those were this body's words. And I want to go through it not only for you folks, but also the folks in the room and who may have viewed the record. On page 23, the findings state the proposed replacement building would not enhance the character of the neighborhood as it is wholly incompatible with regard to its proposed scale, massing, form, and character. On page 25, this body stated, council also noted that the existing building is appropriately scaled for the historic district, and the proposal to demolish did not include a compatible replacement building, particularly with regard to the adjacent landmarks. On page 25, I'm sorry, I think we went to page 25 too quick. That was on page 24. On page 25, where we are now, the existing historic building and the existing non-contributing resource are considered small-scale developments. The proposed replacement building is a rather large-scale development at 4-to-6 stories tall. A smaller scale and more appropriately scaled development would potentially include 2-to-2.5-story row house-type development, which takes cues from the neighboring landmark buildings. Again, the council noted that the RH base zone was not necessarily an entitlement, and new multi-dwelling developments, while generally desirable if located within a historic district, must be compatible with the surrounding historic resources. On page 27, this body stated, the compatibility of the proposed replacement building should be considered primarily with regard to its compatibility with the landmark structures rather than other nearby buildings of lesser significance. The proposed replacement building is not integrated with the existing urban fabric and is not set back from the street. It does not feature intricate architectural detailing, and most significantly, it is much taller and more massive than the modest landmark residential structures in the immediate vicinity. And finally, on page 30, in its conclusions, this body stated, while the existing historic building is an appropriate scale for the adjacent properties, i.e. the Buck Prager, the proposed replacement building is severely out of scale in character and would significantly detract from the historic character of nearby landmarks. That proposed replacement building was 4-to-6 stories. This building that is being proposed is 4-to-5.5 stories. In particular, you can look at the site, you can look at the drawings, look at the north building. The north building starts at 58 feet to 60 feet on Northwest Irving. It's a 58 to 60 foot square. The replacement building in 2015 that this body said was too big started at 4 stories and stepped back to 5 stories and then stepped back to 6 stories. The building now on the north side of the site likely has a larger FAR than the proposed replacement building that you denied in 2015. I would tell you that many people spent enormous amounts of time in 1999 and 2000 setting up the Alphabet Historic District. And many of those same people were involved in 2015 and are involved today. That's why I'm here, to tell you that in my opinion, that it is unfair. It is unfair to all of those people. It's unfair to the district. It's unfair to the city to once again try to push through a 4-to-5.5 story building when this body said essentially that kind of building is too big. Affordability was draped all over this program. I always assumed that they were trying to promote 0-to-60 MFI. Every single unit in this building is a studio, every single one. Of course, it's going to be affordable in the sense that it's cheaper than a one bedroom or a two bedroom, and of course, we need housing. But I don't want to get into that argument because right now we're talking about the criteria. But make no mistake about it, there's not a single person that doesn't want development on that site, not a single person that's happy that the Buck Prager will be seismically upgraded and rehabilitated, and not a single person that doesn't want truly affordable housing there or affordable in the sense that it's cheaper than normal. There's more background. This is all on the record. This commission, at least 2 folks were here in 2016 when Joe Zender promoted right zoning, the north side of Gleason and the Alphabet Historic District from 4-to-1 to 2-to-1. So there wouldn't be an incongruity between base zoning and overlay zoning. This body declined that request, essentially, in my opinion, punting the zoning conflict. So the punt went back to landmarks in 2017 with this current program. There were multiple DARs where the commissioners wrestled with the idea of the guidelines, the program size and mass, with the base zoning and the need for affordability. Multiple commissioners were concerned at the very last DAR that the North Building in particular was too large, that it was overwhelming. Three commissioners specifically said that, yet in the final vote it was 5-1. I don't know what happened, but I would suggest to you the political winds of housing and affordability overwhelmed the commission. That's why in the final findings there is replete references of affordability. Affordability is not a criterion. It's not a criterion. I would argue, finally, on that point, that if this body approves this current program, its decision would be arbitrary and capricious, given its 2015 findings. That its 2015 findings were designed to guide neighborhood associations, neighbors, developers, landlords. That's what the law is designed to do, to set guidelines and guideposts for development, for behavior. I would argue that on a second topic, just briefly for the record, that the North Building itself did not receive the appropriate analysis required under Historic Alphabet Guideline Number 3, which is entitled Hierarchy of Compatibility. This was a main point of my personal appeal, besides the fairness, but I would argue and put on the record that there is plain error at this point in the applicant's presentation, because there was always an assumption, and I went along with it until just last night, that the North Building was new development, not an exterior alteration. I looked at the Portland City Code, the Zoning Code 33, last night, and I've come to the conclusion that the North Building is an existing alteration, not new development, and therefore should have gone through a more extensive analysis with the hierarchy of compatibility, and specifically comparing the North Building and its size to the Northwest Irving landmark structures that are adjacent and contiguous to the North Building. So I put that on the record. I didn't realize that until last night, but I would argue there's plain error. I would, as an appellant, I would open this body to go to the site, walk around the site. It's 1.3 miles from this city hall. Commissioner Udaly lived there, has some memory of it. Look at the landmarks, envision a 60-foot building on the north side. I think you will come to the conclusion that it is too large. Those are designed for workforce apartments right now, which, as this body knows, is sort of an amorphous term and most likely means market-rate studio. This body said in 2015 market-rate apartments in the replacement building was not good enough. I ask you to deny the program or otherwise work with all the parties so we can get this program or some a slightly different program into development as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the council, the applicant did object to the argument that the North Building is exterior alterations, not a new development. That is an argument that was not made before the Landmarks Commission. City staff can speak to that argument a little bit more, but it is, if council has questions, but it is a new argument.
Very good. All right, next up are supporters of the appellants. How many people do we have signed up today, Sue, both for supporters of the appellant and other opponents?
For supporters, we have 7 signed up, and for opponents, there are 14 signed up.
7, 14. Why don't we do this? Let's try to keep our testimony at 2 minutes each for all sides of this, and it's best if you can speak your mind in 2 minutes anyway.
Oh, okay.
It's not easy, so think long and hard about what you want to say and what your key points are. You don't necessarily need to repeat points that other folks have already made because they'll be in the record and they'll be here for consideration. So it's always good if you can make new points, but that's up to you. And it's best if I don't have to play microphone police. So when you see the red light go off, if you could please wrap up your remarks, I'd appreciate it. Why don't you call the first three, please, Sue?
First three, please. Michael James, Joe Warren, and Vicky Skaya, if I have that name right.
Thank Thank you for being here. Good afternoon.
I'll start. My name is Michael James. I am a 20-year resident of Portland. I live two blocks from this project, and I'm delighted to have an opportunity to speak to you. I've testified before the Landmarks Commission. I've been to meetings. I am not a member of Northwest District Association.